ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Thursday, the 16th of April. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. A major fire is burning at one of Australia's only operating oil refineries. The blaze broke out last night at Viva Energy's Geelong facility, 75 kilometres southwest of Melbourne, and is still burning out of control. The facility supplies more than 50% of Victoria's fuel and 10% of Australia's. Our reporter Kathleen O'Connor is covering the story.
Rachel, the fire is large and it's been burning since around 11 o'clock last night, producing flames of up to 50 metres in height. There's also been several explosions, according to Fire Rescue Victorian authorities. Around 50 firefighters have been on scene all night, putting water on the fire. But with it being an oil plant, it's been difficult for them to bring it under control. Now, the Viva Energy Refinery is Victoria's only oil refinery, supplying approximately 50% of the state's fuel. It's one of just two refineries remaining in Australia, employing over 1,100 people. Authorities from Fire Rescue Victoria say the blaze started in the MoGas plant. Now, MoGas stands for motor gasoline, so it's the section of the refinery that produces petrol or unleaded premium gasoline, things that that motorists can get at the bowser. I spoke to Fire Rescue Victoria's Chief Assistant Fire Officer Michael McGuinness a short time ago. This is what he had to say.
There's been some sort of leak of hydrocarbons, flammable liquids, which had very readily caught fire. And it has now been quite a major fire that's been burning all night and still is burning. We're likely to be here for several more hours. Depends on how we can continue our combat and firefighting strategies, and that's by slowly isolating pipework and some of the plant area that's feeding hydrocarbons into this fire.
It's also not the first fire at the plant. It had a significant fire last year due to failing pumps. Fire Rescue Victoria's Chief Assistant Fire Officer Michael McGuinness says it's still quite unclear how much fuel is still in there, but it could burn for hours. But the intensity has decreased, which is a good sign.
And Kathleen, obviously fuel supply is on everyone's minds right now. Is this likely to impact the country's fuel supply?
Yeah, Rachel, look, people are obviously very worried about this and it could very well put further pressure on the current fuel crisis. We just don't know yet. The company was ordered to boost output by the state government due to supply pressures about a month ago. It's unclear just how much fuel has been lost as a result of the fire, but authorities say they've been told by the company Viva that there's no immediate impact on fuel supply at this point. In terms of the damage caused, it will take some time for fire crews to bring the fire under control before an investigation is launched. Victoria Police will also be involved in that investigation, looking into how this could have happened and what overall impact this will have on the country's fuel supply.
And before I let you go, because of those heightened tensions in the world right now, I have to ask, is sabotage something that police will look into?
Yeah, Rachel, authorities say that they're not treating it as suspicious at this stage, but investigators will be looking at everything.
Kathleen O'Connor. As that fire threatens to worsen the situation, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, continues his tour of Southeast Asia to shore up fuel supplies. Here's political reporter Lexi Junewick.
Ben Bennett's dairy farm in southwest Victoria is a world away from the war in the Middle East, but the impact of the conflict is hitting home for the farmer.
You know, we're not sitting here swimming in cash like it's, particularly this time of year, coming out of summer, going into autumn, and we're sort of all hanging out for the autumn break. And on that basis, we need fertiliser, and particularly in the form of urea, which is quite common for the far majority of dairy farmers. That's gone from $800 a tonne to $1,800 a tonne.
In a bid to better equip Aussie exporters and importers with the ongoing shipping and cargo disruptions stemming from the war, the federal government has activated a new service providing real-time logistics advice to businesses. Trade Minister Don Farrell says the initiative will offer up advanced systems used by the government.
What this system will do is, in real time, look at alternative ways of getting your products into that market or bringing the products to Australia.
Farmer Ben Bennett, who also heads up Australian Dairy Farmers, isn't convinced the measure will make a difference.
Well, I suppose the analogy is we've got a freight train that's going to run us over, and now he's just giving us a better view of the freight train that's coming at us.
But the Export Council of Australia, which represents thousands of exporters and international trade professionals, can see the value. Its CEO is Arnold Jorge.
Exporters, what they want right now is straight, timely information about what's happening in terms of the shipping, air routes, sanctions, the market risk. They also want government agencies working off the same page so the advice is consistent.
The National Farmers Federation's president, Hamish McIntyre, is also welcoming the initiative.
But also need the federal government to keep looking laterally and looking for, you know, new opportunities that we can obviously enter into and markets that we may be able to start providing for due to what's going on around the world.
The Australian government is set to join more than 40 other countries at an upcoming international summit led by the United Kingdom and France, focused on safeguarding shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. As the world grapples with the current uncertainty, the CEO of the Export Council of Australia is urging the Treasurer to provide exporters with targeted support in the upcoming budget.
The messaging that's being received at the moment is that the government is focused on budget repair, for example. And unfortunately, what that means is that they're now fearful that whatever support that might still exist there is going to be shut or reprioritized or put to something else. And that will actually literally pull the rug from under them.
Arnold Jorge from the Export Council of Australia, ending that report from Lexi Junawick. Another interest rate rise is looking more likely for Australians next month. The International Monetary Fund has painted a grim picture, warning of a rise in inflation and a global recession, depending on how long the Middle East war continues. Isabel Massali reports.
Asher Golding's life is a little different ever since fuel prices and interest rates started to climb this year. Her partner has a fly-in, fly-out job and used to work the occasional week away. Now he's away 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
And we work as a team, but the reality is that our family feels that absence, and that's the hardest part.
The mother of three is juggling her own work as a nurse in regional New South Wales.
I've always believed life should be about thriving and not just surviving. This impending interest rate is one expected bill away from everything becoming overwhelming.
The public may also be overwhelmed by the International Monetary Fund's latest economic outlook, which considers the impact of the Middle East crisis under different scenarios. National Australia Bank Chief Economist Sally Auld explains.
Yeah, so it makes for pretty sobering reading. And, you know, they have done to their forecasts what most economists are doing to their own forecasts. And that, in very simple terms, is they have cut their growth forecasts for the global economy, but also increase their inflation forecasts.
Dr. Auld says the Reserve Bank of Australia will also be looking at its own forecasts.
They'll be revising up forecasts for inflation here in Australia and inflation globally, and they'll be also revising down growth forecasts domestically and globally. But the IMF is pretty clear on saying that central banks have got to be vigilant. They've got to be prepared to act clearly and decisively, in line with their mandates.
That could mean lifting interest rates.
So we're still forecasting an interest rate rise from the Reserve Bank in May. And I think it's fair to say with everything going on in the world, you know, it's hard to have a huge amount of conviction in that view. But I think we anchor back to this idea that for Australia, the starting point for inflation was already a bit unfavourable before the war happened.
Paul Bloxham agrees. He's HSBC's chief economist for Australia and New Zealand.
So what this does is it makes it clear that the challenge is even more difficult to deal with because inflation is likely to be even higher than was expected and growth is going to be weaker. And so the RBA has some difficult, tricky choices on their hands. And we think, at least in the first instance, the RBA is going to have to focus on the high inflation challenge. And so we think they'll end up lifting interest rates.
And he warns that challenge remains even if the war ends soon.
there's a long tail from the effects of already what's happened. So a part of that stems from the fact that you've already blocked supply of all the things that come out of the Middle East for a little over 6 weeks already.
The RBA's next board meeting will be in early May.
Isabel Massali reporting. Australia's defence spending is set to climb by $53 billion over the next decade as the federal government responds to intensifying global risks. But is it enough to keep Australia safe? Defence correspondent Tom Lowry joined me earlier. Tom, is this spending increase likely to satisfy those who've been calling for significant hikes?
Look, Rachel, it is a significant lift in spending, both $14 billion over the next 4 years. So that's one spending that's going to land on the budget papers when that's handed down next month, and $53 billion over the decade proper. And in the context of a budget where the government's looking to constrain spending, not hike it, those are certainly big numbers. But the short answer is probably not. The US, for example, has been asking allies like Australia to lift spending to 3.5% of GDP. That's the message Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth gave to Australia's Defence Minister, Richard Marles, when they met in Singapore last year in person. So it does fall short there, I suppose, of that benchmark still. The government says this spending hike will get it to 3% of GDP, and that's calculated using what it's calling the NATO methodology. And look, this gets a bit technical, but traditionally when we've measured defence spending in Australia, we've measured direct defence spending, and on that score, we're currently at around 2% of GDP. When NATO measures defence spending, they include other things like defence pensions and housing subsidies. And the government says when you use those figures, you can get to 3% of GDP by 2033 with this new funding the government has announced. But look, that is still unlikely to satisfy those critics, both in the US, but also domestically. The Coalition, for example, and some defence analysts have said Australia needs to get to 3% of GDP on defence spending, but they're arguing for direct spending, not for these other sorts of bits of funding from around the budget to be added in.
So what's on the shopping list, Tom? What's this new funding going to buy?
Oh, look, Rachel, as I said, there is a lot of new money coming into defence through this announcement. You know, $14 billion over 4 years, $53 billion over 10 years. That is a fair bit of cash. And there is still a bit of detail to come today when the defence strategy is handed down around lunchtime that'll outline all of that. But we do know a few things. For example, money going into AUKUS-related projects, $12 billion to upgrade the Henderson shipyards in WA. That was announced late last year, and that's included in these new figures. There's a few billion in funding for drone technology that was announced earlier this week. The government says it's looking at a few different things too. Alternative financing is one thing it's mentioned. That's taking equity in companies. For example, just as a bit of speculation, perhaps small drone companies in Australia to help get them off the ground. Another big question we're still waiting to see answered is reprioritizations. This is something the government has flagged as hard decisions that need to be made to perhaps axe or scale back or delay some defence projects too. We're going to see a bit of that today, so that's something to look out for too.
Defence correspondent Tom Lowry. Palestinians in Gaza fear they've been forgotten as the broader Middle East deals with the war between the US, Israel and Iran. It's now more than 6 months since the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas was agreed to, but Israeli strikes continue to be launched in the war-ravaged strip, and even Donald Trump's hand-picked envoy for Gaza is warning the humanitarian crisis remains dire. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran reports.
In a tent community south of Deir al-Balah, another deadly Israeli strike hits an already devastated community. Palestinians running to safety, carrying the dead and the injured.
This is the biggest proof that the war is not over.
46-year-old Rana Kader and her family have been living in the tent camp that was hit, her fragile shelter all but destroyed, forcing her to seek refuge with neighbours also living in tents.
Wherever we go, there are strikes, in the streets, at home. Also, the place we rented was struck. You don't know where you can go to.
Since the ceasefire began last October, Palestinian health authorities say around 760 people have been killed in Israeli strikes and many more injured. Israel claiming it's targeting Hamas militants, not civilians, even though many women, children and the elderly are listed among the dead. But it's not only missiles that pose a threat. 55-year-old Fatima Hamdona is trying to keep her tent dry. Heavy winter rains lasting later into the year than usual have flooded these camps.
As you can see, we have been soaked in water, and our mattresses are soaked, our clothes are soaked, our tent is soaked. I need a proper tent like the ones from wood. I need food, I need water. I want to live. I want my life to be clean.
It's a simple plea which many fear is going unheard with the world's attention elsewhere. Nikolai Mladenov, the man appointed as High Representative for Gaza by the US President Donald Trump's Board of Peace, making this call to the United Nations late last month.
As tensions in the region escalate, we should not lose sight of the situation in Gaza.
Mohammed Abu Jiab is an economist and newspaper editor in Gaza. He says at the height of the Iran war, Israel imposed more restrictions on the flow of aid into the Strip.
The rise in prices is noticeable in the local markets in Gaza.
Mohammed argues it's putting extra strain on the local economy, with most industries, including agriculture, decimated over years of war. For part of the Iranian war, the Rafah border crossing to Egypt was also shut down, with Palestinians wanting to leave unable to pass. Dr. Khalil Dedran is a spokesperson for Gaza's Ministry of Health.
We have in the Gaza Strip more than 20,000 sick and wounded that are in need of medical treatment outside Gaza.
Israel has repeatedly rejected accusations it's failing to let enough aid into the Strip, insisting sufficient supplies are crossing the border. It's also continued to argue it's facilitating medical evacuations. But in Gaza's tent camps, Fatima Hamdona worries it's only going to get worse.
We have been forgotten. No one is caring about us. No one is looking for us. Who is looking after us?
This is Matthew Doran in Jerusalem, reporting for AM.
Insurance premiums are skyrocketing across the country, but some Australians are facing up to 500% spikes in their premiums. It's led a handful of Queensland councils to become insurers themselves to try to drive down the prices. Grace Nakamura reports.
In southern Queensland, the Boulogne River is vital for farmers and treasured by the St George Township.
It's bloody second to none living out somewhere like this.
Adam Osborne has lived by the river for a decade.
All these residents all use this body of water. I think down here on the weekend there was five or six boats plus kayaks of locals all fishing. You know, it's just all getting along.
But the Boulogne River can flood dramatically. Levee banks have been built to try to protect the town, but insurance premiums are surging regardless.
When we went to renew our policy, the figure that we're paying somehow went through the roof to thousands of dollars compared to what we were paying.
Adam Osborne's annual home insurance premium has been $7,000. This year, he was quoted about $60,000.
No one in their right mind can afford that sort of thing. It's a wage, effectively, isn't it, for one of us in the household, so that makes it very difficult to live, especially with the cost of living these days.
He's just one of many residents hit by skyrocketing premiums since 2020. Boulogne Shire Mayor Samantha O'Toole chairs Queensland's Southwest Regional Organisation of Councils.
I often get told that now people's insurance payments are greater than their mortgage, so it's really staggering.
In 2024, the councils submitted dozens of examples of rising premiums to the Senate inquiry into the impact of climate risk on insurance. She's doubtful that insurers are taking expensive measures like flood levies into consideration. An insurance council spokesperson said individual insurers determine prices and risk reduction is taken into account. They said insurers are working with the Queensland Reconstruction Authority on strengthening flood resilience to put downward pressure on premiums. And the insurance council says the industry is facing higher payouts to cover the 40% rise in construction costs since 2020. But Councillor O'Toole is sceptical.
Obviously there's inflation and other things, but we firmly believe there's a bit of price gouging in the market.
So the six southern regional Queensland councils are taking matters into their own hands and becoming insurers themselves.
So we started to think creatively, you know, what are the other solutions that are out in the market, things that have been done elsewhere that we could look at. Hence the idea of a community protection mutual and how we could progress that.
The councils have engaged international insurance broker JLT to draw up a proposal with a feasibility study expected within weeks.
Grace Nakamura. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Rachel Mealy.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Debate over the US leader's mental health has reignited since he began verbally attacking the Pope and posted an AI image depicting himself as Jesus. Today, David A. Graham from The Atlantic magazine on what Trump's behaviour says about his ability to govern. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.